All right, welcome back. We're here with the great and powerful Matt Susich. Just finished his garden session yesterday.
Yeah,
just finished it yesterday.
But you don't need to know that,
right?
Or 2 days ago now.
Yep.
Was it?
Yeah, it was actually Thursday. Saturday. I thought it was yesterday too, but it wasn't.
It's Thursday.
Yeah,
things are getting blurry.
Yeah, they are getting blurry. Yeah.
It's tiring.
So congrats on the ride. I love Montauk.
Oh,
we
thanks.
Played it
yeah.
on the podcast.
Thank you.
And thanks for listening to the podcast and
oh, man.
Writing about
yeah,
it.
Yeah, I like podcasts.
Good.
And I like you guys.
Oh, thanks.
There you go.
Combination right there.
That's
and,
it.
And I went on and on about the video, and you and I had a chance last night to talk about it.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Talk a little bit about that. Was your idea, right?
It was,
the guy
yeah.
with the cell phone thing?
Right. The concept was just like, you know, I think a lot of people are feeling that way, and they think that way. So it was just nice. The way it came out was great, and I made that with my buddy Jeff and my ex-girlfriend, and there was a I don't remember who came out with the kicker at the end, but it really got driven home. It was cool.
Yeah, the Owen yeah. Henry twist.
Yeah, yeah. Right, right.
Yeah.
Thanks for watching that.
Yeah, that's how I got turned on to it, because Adam and I were doing a lot of boning up for the mm-hmm. podcast before this and
yeah.
had so much music, and I just, you know, YouTube's a great way to see bands play live. And that's when I heard that live version
oh,
of
Supposing
the song.
I Was Tough.
Oh
yeah.
Man, it's so good.
Thanks.
Yeah, I love that song.
I love that song.
Oh, God. It's
did we
so
play
good.
That song, or I just sent it to you?
I think you did. We haven't played it, so we'll have to play it on this thing.
Oh, yeah, no, Fire On. We did Fire On Bowery.
Yeah.
And,
yes.
And Montauk, because yeah. I was so sure that we'd played them.
Right.
Because you were tweeting, maybe we were just talking about you, and you tweeted about it a while back, right before that show we saw at
Scratcher. Yeah.
And that got me thinking that we'd already played it. And then I realized, mm-hmm. when I was talking to you, I realized we hadn't. And I'm like, well, I got to go back and play those first. It stopped me from playing some other stuff, because you're releasing a whole album right now.
Yeah.
Like two singles, two yeah. sides at a time,
kind
basically.
Like a piecemeal, yeah. Two songs.
You're about, are you four in now?
Four in now. There's a bunch more to go. I don't know how many I'm going to do this way, but these are some that I really wanted to like share before. I just think it's the way people are listening to music these days. For a guy like me, you know, like, it's hard to put out an album and the songs get the respect that a single gets. You know what I mean?
Sure.
And so the fans are there, and I trust that they would listen, but on a mass appeal way, like two at a time, I think is the most I can start with.
Yeah, I agree. It's a hard situation when you're someone like, you know,
yeah.
you or me write whole records.
Right.
But like, what do you do? It's hard to figure out what to do. So is this all already recorded?
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, cool.
It's all done. We did 13 songs. I don't know what will be on the final record, but I have a good grasp of it, I think. But yeah, there's two more to come, I think, in November, and then we'll see from there.
Are you spacing them once a month? I can't remember when the other
kinda,
ones came
it's
out.
Like it's that's the beauty of being independent, right?
Yeah,
like
yeah.
Nobody's barking at me to tell me what to do, and it's basically I want to put more stuff out. I think these last two have lived long enough right now alone, and now let me do two more. So it's really on my own schedule. But you know, we're about to hit the holidays. I don't know what the hell I'm gonna do, but there'll be a record. There'll be a full record for the first time in like 6 years for me.
That's great.
Cool.
Yeah.
All right. This is Matt Susich at the Garden Sessions, playing one of his new singles. This is called "I Want Everything."
I want the rolling hills and the flatlands too. I want the rushing valley to the Hampton Dunes. Yeah, I want it. I want the rolling dice. Give me the gambling blues. I want the pain and the sorrow and forgiveness too. Yeah, I want it. Oh, it was all a little easy. The changes came and went a little fast. The memories always seem a little hazy before the crash. I want the rising sun in the evenings too. I want the yesterday and the future you. Yeah, I want it.
Yeah, stuff is really good. You know, I learned about him last night. We were talking. We're both old radio veteran guys.
Oh, yeah.
He came out through radio working, and he worked with Scott Shannon.
Yeah, Scott's a great guy.
He was really good. He was a big part of my book. Just shout it out loud, because he broke Beth for Kiss. He was the guy who broke them. He was he became like the promotions director for Casablanca Records, and they said, you have to make Kiss a crossover hit.
Yeah.
And he came back and said, Beth's the thing. And they're like, yeah, we don't want that. So anyway, and he was like, why? And then he went downstairs to the pressing area, and
who said we don't want that? The band or the label?
Bogart and Casablanca. The band didn't want to do it. Only Peter Criss, because he wrote it. He'd love to have him.
Yeah.
So they said no. But he went down and had it pressed anyway. Nobody knew, and he sent it out. He's just he's a cat that has been in the music business forever.
For so long. He's a freak of nature, too. You could just mention a song, and he'll tell you what year it was released on what label and what the B-side was. Yeah.
Yeah, oh, he's nuts. Yeah.
That's the thing about coming up in radio is that you had 45s, so you remember B-sides, whereas it's harder for everybody else unless you had...
Right.
You know, I have a bunch of 45s, but... And I'm thinking about that right now, because I just remembered that Hall & Oates' Rich Girl, the B-side is London, Luck & Love.
Right.
And I only know that because I had that 45.
Right,
you know?
Right.
Wasn't Hey Jude a B-side?
What'd you say?
Isn't Hey Jude a B-side?
No. Revolution was the B-side.
Revolution, sorry. That's what I meant. Yeah. Revolution was the B-side of Hey Jude.
Of Hey Jude. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, sure. That's funny.
Well, you know, depends how you drop the 45 on the table, really.
You know, exactly. Really, really
looking. Holy shit. I was going to say that Shannon, what was the thing he said? Oh, yeah. He said he got a gold record from Ringo Starr because he started playing the No No song, which is the B-side of Something Else. And he said, "This is the hit. You gotta." And it became a big hit because of Scott Shannon.
For Ringo
Starr.
That's
the kind of life. Yeah, Ringo Starr gave him a gold record.
Yeah,
he just got it in the mail.
What kind of life is that?
It's a pretty good life.
Yeah, it's not bad.
So you're thinking like next year you'll tour?
Well, you know, for me touring, this is another topic I can talk about for extended periods of time. For I think you know there are different schools of doing it. The old school way used to be just get in a van and do it. You know what I mean? I just try to do it as wisely as possible. I kind of go where I'm wanted. You know what I mean? I book the shows that I know there will be people in the room. And so it's not for me. It's not just getting in my car and going around the country and then playing bars. And there's nothing wrong with that. Like, you know, I don't have a feeling of it. It's just not my way.
Right.
I won't go to a bar and play to nobody. Cause these days the attention spans are just so short. And for me, it's like, all right, you want me to open for you in Chicago? Booked. My flight is booked. Yes, I'm in. But and you know, I'll go anywhere where I know
there's people
be
there.
People.
Because
I know, give me a room. I'll do my job. I'm gonna do it well. You know, I'm just not gonna waste my time going to a place to play to nobody. Because that's the way it used to be when you had to. But you don't have to anymore. Because the way you know people listen to music and the way they consume it, it's all just a different day and age now. you know, and I'm grateful for that in a certain way, but also, you know, it's a bummer. I wanted that rock and roll lifestyle, but, you know, now you have to kind of calibrate yourself to,
right,
to certain things. I think it works for people. I'm not saying it doesn't, you know what I mean? It could be a debate and I'm willing to have it, but for me, my method is, I'm going to go where there's a room.
Right.
Well, it's not, I mean, like, even when we started out and we did go everywhere, but we made sure we were opening for bands that, you know, like, we right. started our first tour is opening for Suede and the Cranberries. They're both yeah. doing well right then. Well, Suede was big. Cranberries blew up during the tour. And then we did all those tours with Cracker, mm-hmm. you know, and, you know, so we went everywhere, but we knew we had audiences
yes.
everywhere because
yes.
those bands were doing really well. And we, you know, we hit every club, but we did it in packed rooms,
right.
you know, and, yeah, it's hard otherwise. It's hard to just do it.
Yeah.
You know?
And I know it sounds, I mean, it sounds ridiculous. Like, it's coming out of my mouth. Like, it's a picky thing.
No,
to,
it doesn't.
To be
it
like,
doesn't.
Because you could, like, who does this guy think he is, you know? But the fact is, just doing it wisely, I think, saves you the stress. It's like, all right, I will break my ass to get to the gig if I know there's going to be people there.
But see, you know who you are.
Yeah.
That's the way that it's not like, who does this guy think he is? You're saying, I know I can't. If I just
right.
show up, people are going to be
right.
like, Matt who?
Yeah,
but if
exactly.
I show up there, then they'll be, oh, I like Matt.
Exactly.
And a lot of opening acts have told me this, that they love to win over an audience
love
that's
it.
Not
yeah.
their audience.
Absolutely.
But you have to have the audience there to
exactly.
do that. You know,
exactly.
Yeah. All right, here's Matt Susich playing another one of his new singles. This is Over My Head at the Garden Sessions.
How to cope with what you gave me. They're only daydreams until they're not. But now I know that the facts were fiction, and it was not distance that I needed at all. But I wasn't over my head when I touched you wrong. And I never thought it would lead to anything more. How this goes, it is not my business. I did not ask for this beating heart. But now I know that the facts were mistakes. They're always mistakes until they're art. But I wasn't over my head since I learned how to talk. And I'll be in over my head until death comes a call. I think I'm losing my mind. I can't tell the difference between real and pretend. From the elephant in the corner, the creak in the floorboards or the ATM. But I wasn't over my head before I walked through the door. And I shouldn't even be in this room anymore. And lately I have been surrounded by friends and so alone. I had to go California to realize I did not want to come home. But I'll be in over my head whether I'm here or not. Chasing a new life or mourning a loss. Wasting my time trying to read with the radio on. So I'll just pretend like I never said nothing at all.
You know, a lot of, you know, there was a time when that, the, when those, you know, the map of how to go around the country in clubs. Because right. that's not as old as people think it is. It's right. only in the late 70s when, you know, the early 80s, bands like... that period. Bands like Black Flag and later Nirvana. But they really map that route around the country from the yeah. clubs. Because before that, radio's not playing any of those songs. And you can only hear them on college radio. So people that want to see those bands are starved for it. And the concerts are all in the arenas.
Right.
So when those bands started doing that, people were starved for music. And they were starved to see stuff. And there wasn't any other way to see it or hear it.
Yes.
That's not true nowadays. So just going around to the clubs doesn't necessarily get you an audience. Because you have so much music available to you for free
yep.
nowadays. That yeah. it's not the same guarantee yeah. that you're going to get an audience. Because there's not a music-starved audience out there anymore. Right. It's only people who are really... motivated to go, so it makes a lot of sense in a way, going where you want it, yeah. which is in the end what you end up as a band anyways. People always ask us, why haven't you come here lately, why haven't you go there? When you're in a band, small or big, you got to go where the promoter wants you to come. I mean, you can only go to Brazil if there's a promoter in Brazil yes. that wants you to come to Brazil, right. otherwise yeah. you know, as a result, although I hear the fans on Instagram and Twitter every day about right. why aren't you in Brazil, but nobody's bringing us to Brazil. So
right.
it's like,
right.
you know, that kind of never changes, especially nowadays. I don't think you're wrong at all. I think right. you're absolutely right, because there's just no starvation for everybody gets exactly what they want nowadays.
Yeah.
So there's no starvation for anything.
It's funny you brought it up too. I'm glad this conversation went here, because I think you guys actually talked on the podcast about that map, that route.
Yeah.
And I was like, as I'm listening to that episode, I was like, oh man, I want to talk to these guys about this, because right. because it's
well, there's
is,
a book,
an
right?
Old
there's a book.
Way.
Yeah, that Gina Arnold book. It's actually a great book.
Yes,
yeah, I think it's called Route 666: The Road to Nirvana.
Okay,
it's about all the bands that led up to the blow up in the early 90s, like Black Flag, Camper Van Beethoven, all those bands that made that yeah. roadmap around the country. That, you know, the kind of the birth of indie rock in the yeah. 80s.
Right.
That's really a great book. Actually,
okay, I'll check it out. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I haven't read it in a long, long time, but
probably
I still have it.
Yeah.
She was a critic in San Francisco who consistently ripped us. But she did write a great book.
She did. It always comes up. Yeah. Before I let you go, though, yeah. you know, I always have to ask these people, but I for your stuff, it always has touchstones for me. Like, I hear it, and it's got a folk vein, but also a rock and roll vein. Is mm-hmm. there some specific music that you grew up listening to that would inspire your songwriting or anything now?
Oh, man. Well, I'm sitting next to one of them.
That's me.
Yeah, I mean, the thing about me as a guitar player when I started playing guitar was I didn't care about lyrics. I picked up a guitar at 18 years old, and it was like blues, and you know what I mean? Like, everything was about the solo. Lyrics were just like a vehicle to get to that.
Oh, yeah,
to
yeah.
get to that solo.
Yeah. You wanted to be a guitar hero.
Yeah, and yeah. then I heard This Desert Life, and, you know, the for me, it was that. It was Dylan and Springsteen. And it was like, you know, and that to me was like Mrs. Potter's Lullaby. I was suddenly listening. There's no guitar solos. You know what I
yeah.
mean? There's guitar, but there's no break. And I was like, this is fucking amazing. And the words to me started. I had to start writing songs. It was just that was where it went for me. And I did a full like 180, because I just stopped going to. Like, I remember I was really into, like, Johnny Lang and I obviously Clapton and stuff, but, like, I was into the kid who was, like, close to my age doing what I wanted to do, you know? And so I loved that, like, blues rock style. But, I mean, I dropped it instantly when I started falling in love with writing songs. And it took me, you know, a solid decade to write something I was proud of. But, you know, it's that kind of stuff. It was hearing Counting Crows. I mean, I knew the hits, but that record for me was the deal breaker.
Desert Life's the one that, for whatever reason, with the band, has really lingered. Like, it's the one everybody wants to, they really want to play songs off that record. They want to play High Life, they want to play Speedway, they mm-hmm. want to play Mrs. Potter's or St. Robinson.
I mean,
Kid Thing, I was a girl.
Kid Things blew my mind. That was my first. That was my first ever experience with a bonus track, because on CDs you don't know yeah. that it's there, and it was like a Winamp. I was playing Snood. Remember Snood? It was a stupid video game. But I was in college at the time, and I was listening to This Desert Life in its entirety, and then it ends, and I'm sitting in silence playing Snoot because I didn't stop the CD, and it scared the shit out of me.
Yeah, and then Ben yeah. was hello.
That's the perfect yeah. extra track. You're like, what the fuck
yeah.
is happening?
It blew my mind, and that was like the end of the bonus track days, because then now you yeah. know, now it's like you just can't do it anymore, which is a true bummer. What song are they going into at the end of that? Now that I have you right
Kid
across
Things.
From me.
No, it's funny. We took the shit we were saying after the song and put it before the song. And then at the end of the song, we put the stuff we were saying before the song where they're all looking for me. I'm lying on the floor in the piano room because I'm finishing some lyrics and I'm on the ground and they're like, oh, is there a go, no go? No, right. We do not have the lead singer. I don't have my headphones on, so I can't hear them talking. And then I stand up and they're like, we have achieved lead singer. It's all Bannon, like, because there's a mic there that we had a mic hanging over the drums. It was like a transistor radio.
Yeah.
And then we'd reverse the polarity so it would record the kick. And he's like lifting it up. Oh, no, no, go.
Oh, my God.
We
recorded that song with all this weird stuff. Like, everything sounds weird in that song because
the solo is that a mandolin?
I think it is a mandolin through some weird shit, though.
Yeah, it's crazy. It's crazy. Yeah. That's so funny because that was a major disappointment. That's how it ends.
One, two, three.
Right, right.
That was the funny part because it's all the banter afterwards is before the song, and then the stuff before the song is after. So the album finally ends on a 1, 2, 3, 4.
Yeah, like, what am I missing?
Yeah,
yeah, exactly.
It's over.
I love that. Right. Yeah, it's
the
Pulp Fiction of songs. Yeah. The ending is really the beginning.
The last of my Ohio suite for that record.
That's right, yeah.
I love that record. To me, too. Like,
you know, Adam and I have talked about this before working on the book and on this podcast. I go through different periods. And since working with him, I've learned to love Satellites more than I did. Mm-hmm. I did like it a great deal.
Yeah.
You have a pantheon. You have certain records that just mean something to you. But I got married that year, and that you know, we went out to the desert for our honeymoon, and we just listened to it, and that record speaks to me.
Right.
It's probably my Desert Life.
Oh, yeah.
It's probably my favorite.
Right.
Although I love Hard Candy because I love all the songs. I love the sound of it, the pop aspect of it. So it's the same thing with
any
band.
It's where you were in your life. You know?
That's what makes
music so...
I just loved all the experimentation on this Desert Life. I have so many fun memories of the weird shit we did to make that record. Like, High Life, when I started to sing High Life... It was so easy to sing it, and it didn't have any tension or, like, just didn't work. It was flat. And so I had remembered David Lowery and I talking once about when they recorded Rainy Days and Mondays for the Carpenters tribute with Sparkle Horse and him, and the rule for the song was everyone except for the drummer had to be upside down. And so I was like, I wonder if that would work. It would probably make it harder to sing, and maybe that would give me the tension. So I'm upside down for all of High Life except standing up for some of the high parts. I had to stand up for them, and I did them later. But I'm laying on the floor with my feet up on a chair.
Oh, my God.
Upside down, holding, singing that song.
Can I tell you right now, this is blowing my mind. Because the one thing I always said to my friends was, if I ever get a chance to talk to Adam Duritz about this Desert Life, I want to ask if he had a head cold during High Life. You just rocked my world.
Yeah,
this is
amazing.
I can't
hear that song the same now that you told me that story.
It didn't have any tension to it because I was singing it. And by going upside down, it made it harder, less breath. So I ran out of breath at the end of the lines, and I had to, like,
Holy shit, it has
all this tension to it.
There you go.
And it was all because of that. And it's funny, I've used it since then, too. There's a few things on Saturday nights and Sunday mornings where I did that. Mostly Sunday mornings, like Anyone But You was another one where it was too easy and needed tension. So I was in a chair, and I would, like, sing... bent over on my lap, and then I would sit up for some of the other parts, and then I would bend over for the verses, because it restricts your airways.
Sure.
And by
sure.
doing that, it gives you this, like, burst sort of singing instead of, like,
long, breathy things.
I love it. Came out of David Lowery talking to me, like, not when we were there, but, like, years before, because we'd been friends, about how he did the whole... Everyone except for the drummer had to be upside down for Rainy Days and Mondays.
Had to be.
That was their rule. They made it a rule for themselves, because, it totally worked. I think there's something else in that record that I did that way too, but I remember High Life for sure. I'm upside down for a lot of it.
Outstanding. That's the
best.
You know, are you familiar with Alice Cooper's stuff?
No.
He has a song called Ballad of Dwight Fry. It's on like one of the early records, and it's about a guy in a mental institution. And Bob Ezrin, who produced it, actually put Alice in a straitjacket, sang the whole song in a straitjacket.
Wow.
And stayed in it for the next 10 years on tour. Yeah.
But he kept doing it on stage. And also, Ace Frehley told me he never sang a song because he hated to sing. In the early days of Kiss, everybody else would sing his songs, like Gene Simmons. He sang every one of the songs lying on his back. He couldn't sing sitting up or standing up. He had to lie on his back, so they set up a whole rig for him to lie on his back. So these stories are the best.
The old day studio stories. And that's why that whole back to Alice Cooper. The reason I've been meaning to get into him is because of Shep Gordon. That whole thing.
Did you watch that movie?
Superman.
I haven't seen it yet.
Oh my God! You
great
see it.
Documentary.
So because what an outstanding
Michael Myers.
Guy. You know, like
great humanitarian.
You don't know anything about this. This is a great example of a person you had no idea existed. You know, outside of the things he created, he helped create, and you find out this amazing story about this guy, and you're like, wow, I want to be friends with him.
Right. You know? And you know what? He also has a great perspective. His story about meeting Alice Cooper, he went to the Cheetah Club in L.A. Alice Cooper was opening up for the Doors. Doors played. There was about, like, you know, 400, 500 people in the club. The Doors are done, or, you know, they're done. And for some reason, Alice Cooper comes on next. I don't know if it was, like, a revolving thing. It wasn't like he was the Doors were opening for Alice Cooper. They come out and clear the place in, like, 5 minutes. And all the only person standing is Shep Gordon going, I love this.
Yeah.
And he told him, I want to manage you, because anybody who can clear a room, you guys are provocative enough, right? Which is a great story.
Yeah,
know?
Yeah.
And it shows you a lot about Shep. Yeah, that's right. A great
story. Well, because he made it, Mike Myers made it, because Mike Myers became, he was, like, going through a hard time or something and ended up staying at his house in Maui for, like, months.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
He was having kind of a nervous breakdown.
Yeah.
And he went there, and he like, doctored him back.
Yeah, he's like, yeah, man, stay as long as you want. And he
just post SNL, like,
oh yeah,
yeah, yeah. Yeah, recently.
Remember when he had that recently. Whole like the movie went south when he did what that Guru movie? There was like, his career was like totally, but it was personal. Yeah,
sure. Yeah, he was going through some personal stuff, right?
Yeah,
yeah. It's really interesting, and he just like kind of just nurtured him back to health. It was like to have a place to stay in Maui.
Yeah,
so. Funny how the Doors are in the middle of all these weird stories, like in the Turtles movie.
Yes,
have you seen My Dinner with Jimmy?
No.
Man, the guy who did the videos for Palisades Park and for Scarecrow, he made a movie a few years ago called My Dinner with Jimmy. It's based on Howard Kalin's book, who's one of the two, like the Flo and Eddie guys, who's a singer for the Turtles, you know? It's all about like the time right after they release Happy Together. They're in L.A. and then they go to London for their first like British appearances, you know, as they're blowing up. And it's like, so it starts at a gig at the Whiskey, and the Doors are opening for them. They're a new band, and they're all hanging out. They end up going to Canner's later on, and it's like it's the Turtles guys hanging out, and then Howard goes over to the table, and there's Zappa and Mama Cass and Morrison walks on top of the table, walks by, and they all hang out, and they end up going to England, and they go over Graham Nash's house, and it's the night before they're releasing this record. He plays it for Sergeant Pepper's.
Sergeant Pepper.
He has the reel-to-reel, and then they go out to this, I can't remember the name of the club, the big club that was in London that was famous, and they end up running into the Beatles and the Moody Blues.
Brian Jones.
And then he's walking out the door, and this guy's like, I know you, and he's like, you're Howard Kalin. He goes, I know you, you're Brian Jones, and they end up hanging out. Brian's got his friend comes in with him, who's Hendrix.
Hendrix, known
in London,
right.
But not in America.
Right.
Howard Kalin ends up like, Jones eventually leaves with this woman. As he says, there are millions of middle-aged housewives all over the world nowadays who have fond memories of their days with their night with Brian.
Right, exactly.
But Brian leaves eventually. They have this terrible experience with the Beatles, and well, mostly with Lennon, who's a dick.
Yeah.
And then
he literally has dinner with Jimi Hendrix.
And then him and Jimi Hendrix sit down to dinner in the club, and they just talk all night.
And that's like half the film, and it's fantastic.
And it is, in some ways, it's like a cheap movie, the guys don't necessarily look like who they're supposed to be, but it is the most realistic portrayal of interband and intraband, the way musicians are with other musicians, just the hang of people who love music and play music and love each other and bicker with each other and are shitty to each other.
Sure.
It is the best portrayal of that I've ever seen in a film. I hate movies about musicians. Man. You know how I am about this. I hate it.
Yeah.
But this one, it is the most beautiful, perfect portrayal of musicians with musicians I've ever seen.
Yeah.
And I got to recommend. It's not easy to find. Yeah. I have copies.
Yeah,
of
he gave me. It's one of the first things he gave me when we started working together.
It is so good, though. And any musician will appreciate it because you get to see musicians like us here.
Well,
it's a musician. It's a lot like this in a way.
Right, so now you got books to get.
Yeah, I know.
You got movies to see. Yeah. So you better get.
We got to be in touch because I got you need a bunch of books that we were talking about last night.
Oh yeah. We do have to wrap because Ehud.
Yeah, sure.
One after tonight, you'll have the same situation everyone has, which is you're going to have to dive into Stu.
Stu. Well, funny
Stu
story.
And the Negro problem,
I've known Stu for a long time because my friend is a Broadway producer who produced Passing Strange.
Oh, who's that?
He was at the time, I think they were with Parnes. It was.
What's the guy's name that you're
John Johnson.
Okay. I know some of those guys that work with
him. Yeah, so right now he's with it's Joey Parnes, John Johnson, Sue Wagner. But at the time, I think it was a different. I can't remember the name right now off the top of my head. But I saw Passing Strange on opening night, and then you were there. And
I was there.
You were at the Tonys.
Yeah. I wasn't opening night. I was on tour. I missed.
Right.
It.
I was at the Tony. I saw opening night and Passing Strange, and then at the Tonys, you introduced them.
Yeah, I did.
Yeah, and then the after party at Rock Center.
Yeah.
And that was he blew my mind because my friend's always trying to get me to do the Broadway thing. He's like, "You're gonna love this one because it's like a rock. It's I'm not huge on the musicals." And that one, he was like,
"It's a different one.
You gotta see it. Yeah, because the band's on stage the whole show. It was an amazing show.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, yeah. So we do have to wrap.
Yeah, let's do it.
All right, thanks.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Matt.
Peace.
All right, here's Matt Susich again from the Garden Sessions with his friend Amy Vachel singing harmonies. This is another one of his new singles. This is called Back to Zero. Check this out.
Just so we know, we're free to go now. Another lesson learned, let's add it to the pile. You grow your hair out, I put on 10 pounds. And think about all the clothes I'm back at zero, paving a dirt road, sleeping dog in my bed till rising shine. I got my just so we're clear, I am not welcome here. Take your position and I'll take mine. Run up your flag, I'll run and hide. Go ahead while I stay behind. I'm back at zero, paving a dirt road, sleeping dog in my bed till rise and shine. Unpack my whole life. The trouble is I'm restless in the darkness. The trouble is I'm just a witness to my own unraveling. Let's get this straight. It's not the end of days. We may live, but I'm not okay. I'm back at zero, paving a dirt road, sleeping dog in my bed till rise and shine. Rebuild my whole life.
I'd like to take this opportunity to thank Ehud of SBG Media, who recorded all the Garden Sessions and the one-on-one project, of which he created 5 years ago, to record artists in small intimate sessions, just like at the Underwater Sunshine Festival. He provided all of the live music you're hearing, the audio for those sessions. Videos will be up on SBG Media's website, and the Underwater Sunshine Festival website. So we'll have new videos for you as the weeks go on. And then you'll hear some of the audio recordings of those sessions as we bring out the interviews here on the podcast. I also want to thank my friend Johnny M for sitting in the entire weekend and recording all of the podcasts. There were so many different guests coming and going. He just did a yeoman's job. Now let's hear from Michaela Davis and her band, who were just dynamic in their garden sessions. You'll hear it here in a song that we played in an earlier podcast called Other Lover, and then our discussion with Michaela Davis.
Thank you.
So we're here with Michaela Davis, who just did a fantastic set here for the Garden Sessions. Going to be playing the Underwater Sunshine Festival. So I have to ask you this. I have so many questions. We played your music on the podcast.
Yeah, I listened to that. That was fun. Thank you for doing that.
Of course. I just want to know, how do you guys write these songs? Because as Adam and I both pointed out, it's so unique with the harp and everything. Do you get down and kind of jam out something? Do you mostly write on piano and then translate it to the harp? How do you do that?
It really depends. I used to only write on harp. But I had a pretty big writer's block thing happen, and I started writing on piano again, because I originally started writing songs on piano. So, I mean, usually I've been writing a lot with Alex, and we'll sit down at the piano, he'll have a guitar. I'll usually have some melody idea, and we'll flesh it out, and I don't know. It's different every time. There's no rules, you know, so...
I've been doing that more recently. Like, for years, I only started with music on the piano. But just in the last few years, I just started with my phone, just humming things into it.
All right,
more and
yeah.
more starting with these ideas and then bringing them to some of the guys and sort of working on from
Yeah, like taking
ideas.
A voice memo.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I'm
totally.
Addicted to my voice memo now.
Pure Divine Love, which we just played, I thought of the melody when I was taking a shower, and I just got my phone out and, like, hummed the melody. So when I went back and was listening to ideas, I could... like just hear the shower water, and I was just really quietly like da, 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 da.
Elvis Went to Hollywood started in the shower. That was a shower song. I jumped out of the shower. Right. My phone was on the table, grabbed it, sang it, back into the shower, finished up. The only problem I find with that is when I wrote things on piano, I knew I'd written them. I either from writing it down, I know it. The other day, someone asked me a little while ago if I had any songs, and I said, no, I haven't written anything. And Zoe's like, look at your phone. You've got a thousand things in your phone. But I forget to go back to them because they're all, I mean, they'll be there. They're not going anywhere.
Yeah, it kind of turns into clutter sometimes.
Yeah.
The same problem. It's like all just dates, no names. So I'm like, what is this? I don't have an afternoon to like go through every single thing and be like, this
will sometimes
work.
I forget, like I hear the melody and I can't figure out what I was thinking because there's no chords behind it. You know?
Oh, yeah, that
so sometimes
harder.
I can't remember like what the root was. So now I'll try to like hum the root of like the key and then sing the melody.
That's a better idea.
Yeah.
Give yourself some like a diving board.
Yeah.
Okay, here's where we start.
Was that the second song that you played, the one you just referenced?
Yeah.
I was fascinated by the fact that you made the harp sound like a sitar.
Oh,
it has
yeah.
like a real Indian flavor to it. And I just wonder, is those experimental things that you don't pick up when you first learn how to play the harp? Is it just things you experiment with?
Yeah, well, I mean, Kian introduced me to like Ravi Shankar. And then I discovered Alice Coltrane and was just obsessed. And it's something you can do on the harp if you pluck the note and kind of press in above the pegs up top, and the pitch will bend. Because a harp, you can't really pitch bend. When you change a pedal, it just changes to the half step immediately instead of going...
Pedal
steel or something.
Which is exactly what a sitar sounds like. It's like really cool. It's like a mood setter.
Yeah, yeah. So I was trying to sound like a sitar.
Yeah,
there.
Yeah. And you made it. You did it.
Thanks.
I was going to say, too, the last thing you played was, what was the piano song you played?
One of These Days. It's not out. It's an outtake from the last record, and I think we're going to re-record it for the next record.
Yeah, melody-wise, like the way she was phrasing it, it reminds me, I just read a book about Stevie Nicks, and we did a podcast where we were playing some of Stevie's earlier stuff, and the voicing of that had it. Do you have vocal influences? Not to say she's one, but
yeah, she is one. I love Stevie. I love Neil Young. Cass McCombs is one of my favorite songwriters. I could go on forever.
Thank you.
tattooed self told me to let it go. I'd put one foot in front of the other, but I'd be walking just like a ghost. Can't put my finger on just how I know it, but one of these days I'll be fine. One of these days I'll be fine. I know one of these days I'll be fine. One of these days I'll be fine.
This may be a late question because I know you guys have been playing together for a lot of years now, but did you find a big difference playing with a sitar as a central instrument as opposed to something else? Arranging songs, or not sitar, I mean a harp. You got me with a sitar thing.
We did play with sitar for a little while. Kian was playing sitar and guitar.
Kind of play like that. Your phrasing is kind of like that. Yeah. It reminds me of like the Doors kind of style, you know? Yeah, yeah.
As far as arranging with the harp in mind, I think when we first started playing, it was like, okay, we got to be really careful not to get in the way of the harp. And then as Michaela sort of found her sound like amplified more, trial and error, different gear, and also just like, you know, arranging, figuring out what works in sort of a rock band setting, we sort of just settled into like, oh, it's almost like a guitar or a piano, somewhere in between. Like, it works in the same way. So we ended up just playing like rock songs with harp in there at the same time.
Yeah, it really works because there's a full-on sort of acid psychedelia thing going on. It's delicate at times, but it doesn't seem like you guys are being all that delicate, feeling the need to be all that delicate around it.
Not so much anymore. I think we used to a lot more.
Yeah, people always think that we should be playing in churches or something, sit down, and it's like, no, thank you. I want to play in a club. I want people to be standing. That makes us feel better.
That's what kind of knocked me out the first time I saw you at pianos, because it was really propulsive. It was really psychedelic. It was cool that way.
It was the most incredible series of texts I ever got from Adam. It was like within 30 or 40 seconds, bloop, bloop, bloop. It was like all this audio. You got to hear that. Listen, look at this.
Video text. Holy shit. You've got totally to check this shit out.
Yeah. He was blown away by your guys' look on stage, the whole presentation, and just the sound. It was like the whole package, really. Yeah.
Cool.
All right. As long as we're talking about the sort of psychedelic acid rock influences in this band, let's play Little Bird from the Garden Sessions. This is Michaela Davis. This is the song that really jumped out at me as the most kind of late 60s, early 70s psychedelic. So this is Michaela Davis band, Little Bird.
In my life I've been compared to a little bird. I've got to spread my wings. You nested in my bed and I came alive. Now I can fly. I was given something real, but I didn't understand. Let
So are you excited about playing?
Yeah, really excited. We're pumped. We haven't played Bowery Electric before. I've been there.
It's good to be back in New York City.
Yeah, we haven't played here in a little bit.
I actually think the last time was when we played at Pianos, maybe.
Oh, really?
It might have been.
Oh, no, we played at Baby's All Right.
Oh, yeah, I forgot about
in,
that one.
August, which was super fun as well.
You guys are on tour right now, though. You have gigs, like, every day this week,
yep.
right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Where's tomorrow?
Philly?
Philly, yeah.
Yeah.
Was D.C.? Is that last
and
night?
Then
last night was Connecticut.
Connecticut.
Yeah.
D.C.'s on Monday, I think.
We were just in Europe, too.
Oh, yeah, no,
we
I saw those.
We just did 3 weeks in Europe and then had 2 days off and started
this post
run.
Totally reminded me of our first tours in Europe because it was just like we were having too much fun to contain in one Instagram post.
Yeah.
Yeah, and we were tour managing ourselves, so it was like driving and playing and figuring out where we were staying and everything. And
did you manage to meet people over there and get places to crash? Or
yeah,
you,
yeah, yeah. We have a
we
little pool
well.
Of friends out there. Uh-huh.
We borrowed a harp for the whole tour. Mm. That was pretty sweet.
Yeah.
Where did
yeah.
you get a harp over there?
My friend Annabelle, we're friends now. She messaged me on Instagram a few months ago and asked me how I bring my harp to Europe. And I told her I don't. I rent one every time I go out. And she said, oh, well, I see your next tour starts in Amsterdam area. You should just use my harp. Just borrow it for the whole tour. So that was incredible. I just got to use her harp. She just let me use it.
It's not the it's instrument amazing. You think of as necessarily getting... We'll just have them lying around.
Yeah, you know? Yeah. You really can't busk with this. It's kind of a harder...
And it worked? It was the kind you needed?
Yeah, it worked.
Sounded great.
It was great.
Wild.
So I just wanted to... I know everybody probably asked you this, but I'm really interested. When did you first pick up the instrument? What inspired you to take it?
I started when I was 8 at just my public school. They offered harp in Rochester, New York, the school Penfield. And end of second grade, the music teacher showed all the kids all the string instruments you can take in third grade if you want to, you know, violin, viola, cello, bass, and harp. And I immediately wanted to play the harp when she showed it.
How did your mom feel about that?
She was super supportive. My parents let me play, and I had this grand idea. I wanted to put the harp underneath this like skylight that we have in the living room because my Oma grandmother had just passed away, and I was like, Mom, I want to play harp under this window so Oma can hear me. That's and, cool. Yeah, it's pretty cute.
It's very cool. I would say that's one word for it.
There are a lot of worse instruments a kid can pick up, though, at the beginning than harp. Because, you know, violin, that can be pretty screechy
yeah.
around the house.
Yeah, so
know?
I have a trombonist. I have a 10-year-old trombonist starting in
there
my
There you
house.
Go. The horns also, very
it's
loud.
Very
loud. You know?
Yeah, and would you have any, did you hate your piano lessons? Because my daughter complains every time, and then she plays, and she loves it. So I don't know if that's...
I loved it. Until middle school, I stopped taking piano because I started piano and harp at the same time. I stopped taking piano lessons, kept going with harp. And I had this phase in high school where I was like, I don't know, seen just like not wanting to practice.
Emo.
A bunch. Emo, yeah.
Emo phase.
You know, my Circa Survive phase. and I was in the youth orchestra in Rochester, and I remember my teacher was like, Michaela, if you're not going to practice and be prepared for your lessons, you can't play in the youth orchestra anymore. So I kind of got my stuff together and started practicing Morgan and went to school for harp. So I have a degree in harp performance. And Alex and Kian both went to SUNY Purchase, so they... Alex has...
My wife went to SUNY Purchase. There you go. Great
right.
art school. Great art
nice.
School. Yeah.
Yeah.
Cool. I wanted to play drums when I was a kid, and yes. my dad said, no, if we move into a house with a soundproof room, you can play drums. Otherwise, piano and guitar, that's it. You know, you can play those. And then we got to California, and we went to see that new house we'd gotten, and I walked into this one room, and it had a soundproofing on the ceiling. And I was just like, oh, my God. Dad, that is so cool. Well, I thought he'd done it. I went, Dad, I can't Aww. Believe it. It was so nice of you. You did it. I'm so excited to play drums. And my dad looked at me like, what are you talking about? I'm like, the room, the soundproofing on the ceiling. And he said, oh, this is going to be an interesting lesson for you. No. No.
A lesson in disappointment.
This will happen more than once in life. No. No. Okay. Now I don't have to sit in the back. It's great.
That's true. So you got new stuff you guys working on? Anything? I know it's tough to. He says it's impossible to write on tour. Do you have any time to even think about something like that?
Not really, because we're all like doing all the work.
Sure. Oh, right. You're tour managing and
I mean, and I don't really play guitar, so I can't just whip out a guitar and start playing in a hotel room or anything. Yeah.
That's why it's hard for me.
Yes, you've said that many times. Piano, it's not
a piano,
piano
room. In the hotel room.
Exactly. Yeah. How are you supposed to? Yeah. But I want to learn how to play guitar. I know some chords.
Really good.
You'll get there.
Oh yeah, I can finger prick.
Oh, I bet. Yeah. I bet. Yeah.
Yeah, because it's like plucking. Yeah.
Well, the new record is fantastic. Honestly, that album is so good.
Thank you. It's
got great dynamics to it, and we were talking just to Casey Anderson before about how you sequence the songs really work. It's just a beautiful record.
Thank you so much.
Of course.
Yeah, we appreciate it.
Well, we should probably wrap it up because sound tells you when it's time to wrap it up.
Yeah, yeah.
There's more sound. Rescue. Elizabeth's already been rescued.
Yeah. Sorry, Elizabeth.
Sorry, Elizabeth.
Thanks for waiting down there for so long.
The van watchwoman. Yeah.
All right, cool.
All right, we'll see you guys tonight.
All right, yeah.
See you later.
Break many legs, you guys.
See ya.
All right, we'll do.
All right, we're going to move on now to Rivoli. And before we get to the interview, let's start with one of their songs from the Garden Sessions. This is Sleep Talking.
All right, so we're here with Rivoli. Am I pronouncing that right?
You got it.
All right.
Jen and Sam from Rivoli, thank you guys so much. That was incredible.
Amazing.
Again.
Thank you.
Sleep Talking is like one of my favorite songs now, ever. And my wife's, too. I told you guys, she plays it in her yoga classes now. It's such a beautiful song. And your accompanists did a wonderful job on it, cello and violin. It's a gorgeous song.
Thank you.
How'd you write it? Okay. Do you guys write together? Is that how you do it?
Yeah, we do.
Every song's different. Mostly I would say Sam takes a lead on lyrics, and then I come and bring melodies on guitar. But we always have parts in all of it. She has great melody ideas, and sometimes I have an occasional lyric or thought. Usually I just spew out words, and she takes it and makes it beautiful. So.
How'd you guys start up? Felipe said he met you in Paris?
Yeah, we were at a backyard barbecue in Paris, France, and I met him, 4 or 5 years ago or something like that.
Wow.
And then we reconnected in Lexington, Kentucky, 3 years later. I don't know, it's so crazy.
That is crazy.
Isn't that bizarre?
It is.
So crazy.
She was at a backyard barbecue in Paris.
Who knew they even had barbecues in Paris?
Right,
backyard barbecue in Kentucky, and then you met him later in Paris. That makes more sense to me.
Do they call it something different over there? I used to be fluent in French, but I don't remember what barbecue was.
I don't remember.
Doesn't matter. It was a silly question.
Are you guys both from Lexington?
No.
Where are you
I
from?
I am. I'm from Lexington, Kentucky.
Jen's from Lexington, and I'm from an hour and a half south of Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. So I moved back 2 months after her and her husband and two kids did from France. And then I literally was just I need a new place to live. I was going to visit 3 different friends, one in Arizona, one in Michigan, and then Jen. She was the first stop, and I got to Lexington. I was there for 2 days, and she asked me if I wanted to move in with her family. And I was like, okay. So I lived there up until last month when I got married. But, yeah. So.
And that's the story.
That's the story.
It's a good thing you got married. You guys would still be living together. Not necessarily good for a band, you know.
That's right.
Too much familiarity.
Yeah, it's good.
We had the same jobs when we first moved back, too. So we literally spent every second together.
Yeah.
We wrote some songs while painting houses.
That was the job?
That was our job. Yeah.
Outside painting or inside painting?
But mostly inside. Yeah.
We would have band meetings, band fights, band makeups, and then write a song all in one day. It was great.
While we were painting houses.
I'm always really amazed.
That's efficient.
Right?
We have a problem with efficiency in my band, but that's efficient.
At least we're making money.
Yeah, no, I mean.
Yes.
Yeah. And saving time.
Yeah.
Yep.
Sorry to have interrupted you.
No, no, not at all.
I didn't want to just drop that.
You couldn't. Like that was pretty impressive. Yeah, so I'm always curious about this when people harmonize so beautifully together. Like with Simon and Garfunkel, they were kids together, right? So they would sing songs. And, hey, we sound good together. How did two people in disparate situations, how did you guys just start singing together while you're painting? I don't know. I'm just saying,
no.
How do you connect that way and know that you can sound? So, and you trade off. I don't want to steal your thunder, Adam, but he mentioned how you sing low in one part, then you go up. And it's like, it's telepathic. I mean, how when you first met, how did you know that you'd be great together?
So we were living in Paris, France, and we both went to the same church. And one weekend she led, like not too long after she got there. It's the first time I'd ever seen her play or sing. And I heard her and I was like, oh my gosh. Like, there's just something special about what she's doing, how she sings. And I think it would be a good fit for some music that I was working on. So then, like, literally after that, she would come over and hang out at my apartment until, like, 2 and 3 in the morning, like, several nights a week. And we would just jam and sing. And, like, we just couldn't stop. So that's...
And then one night, Jen was like, wonder what would happen if we tried to write a song. And it was horrible.
Yeah,
but
it was
not
real bad.
Like, terrible for, like, having literally never written music before. And we really enjoyed it. But then I was supposed to actually live in Paris for another year and a half. And Jen was leaving because she had been there for 5 years with her family and her visa was up. So we created this, like, really close musical bond. And then 5 months later, she was leaving. And I didn't think I would really... I don't know if I would ever see her again or, like, how long it would be. It would be at least, like, a year. And then I ended up leaving Paris 2 months after they did and just followed her to Kentucky. Yeah.
Wow.
So what gave you the idea? How long have you been using the quartet, the cello and the viola?
Really? This is
like a couple weeks.
First time.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Brand new.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, it's on the recordings have stuff on them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Seth impressive. Has been playing with us for about a year, little over a year. Yeah, and Elizabeth is a recent addition. Yeah. As far as, like, we'll love to have her as much as she can play with us, because it's such, now it's 2 weeks in, it's like, wow, this is really cool. So.
Yeah, it's quite a sound.
It is.
Yeah.
It's so beautiful.
It's taken us a while to find that, too, because when we first started playing, like, in bars and things around Lexington, like, just the two of us alone are not usually loud enough to overpower the sound of a loud bar, so we would... like have a full band with drums and everything, but I always hated it. Like, I would walk away from every show and not feel like our song sounded like I wanted them to. So it's cool having these two guys because they are so good at feeling the music. It's like different every time we perform, which is fun.
It's nice when at the club too, where you had more volume to, so you could go more highs and lows, because it enabled you to really dig in on the picking. And when you were playing the hollow body,
Someone
you could really like jarring sounds out of the two acoustics when they were coming out. I really loved that sound against the it was a little more delicate today, and it was I mean the arrangements are so beautiful, but like you're doing a lot of cool stuff with the more volume range you have, the more it goes, you know, big and quiet and big and quiet. It's really cool. The dynamics were amazing. I thought
thank you.
Yeah, that is a strong point of your, and you're playing a lot of the open tuning, so you're like just you're running your fingers in that, and it's just it's beautiful. It doesn't even look like you're making any sound, and it's just you said it, especially at the club. You'd say, even when you did the little rhythmic thing with your fingers on Slip Talking, it's like, where's that coming from? Oh, you know, it's really great sound for only 2-4 people. It's very impressive.
Yeah, a lot of times acoustic acts don't have that kind of dynamics that you guys
correct.
Have.
Yeah,
you know, they don't dig in places. It's all very light, but you guys like it, especially in the club, but here too in some places, you know. But the club, when you had more volume, you were really digging into some of it, and it was jarring in a really cool way, jumping out and then getting so delicate and fragile, and then it was beautiful. It was exciting too, though.
Oh, cool.
It was.
Thanks.
2018 that album came out, the last one. That's
our first project. It came out in July of this year, 2018.
Okay, yeah. So you're working on something now?
Yes.
Yeah.
You are?
Yeah, because I remember when Felipe first talked about you guys, there weren't any recordings except, like, videos.
Right,
there
were
a few videos. I love the EP, though.
Thank you.
Yeah, it is great. We, you know, it was so cool preparing for this festival. We did it in about a week. Adam starts pummeling me with music. And that's kind of what he does anyway for me, you know. And it was so much fun. And you guys jumped right off. Right out of the speakers for me, because, like I said, my wife loves this kind of music. I do too, but it just, It's very atmospheric. I think I used that on the podcast when we played your songs. And the whole EP has an atmosphere to it.
I'm really into space, so that's definitely
good to hear.
Oh, yeah.
What we were going for.
That's right. What did you announce from the stage? These songs are about, what did you say?
Well, Ulysses is about going to outer space.
Outer space, right.
Yeah.
You said that, which is what it is.
That's right.
We almost came to blows over that. He really wanted Ulysses. I really wanted to play Sleep Talking.
No, it was the other way around.
No, because I won. We played Sleep Talking.
The song's called Ulysses.
Figured out a way to pioneer, put a man into orbit, watch him as the fire disappears, we'll wager and forfeit. No goal, tell where we'll go, yeah. We don't have any way of control.
Ask me how to get back once we left. Thank you.
great job. You know, congratulations. And thank you guys for playing the...
Thanks
the,
for having us.
Oh, it's... This is, yeah. Been amazing. We're so honored.
First time in New York? No.
No.
Nah, first time playing in New York, yeah. But yeah.
It was cool. And you guys did a fantastic job. I'm looking at
you were intimidating everybody else. My friend Chad, who's the guitar player for Live, you know, we just got off a summer tour, and they're heading to Australia in a few days to play in front of huge crowds. And you guys finished, and he's like, well, fuck, I don't want to follow that.
That's a great...
He said, dude, you do have a lot of really great songs. He goes, yeah, the songs will help. Fuck.
He's a great
like, I could also just listen more. I really like this. They could have our slot. Oh, shut up. It's good when you can intimidate other musicians.
Yeah,
nice.
Sure as hell is. That's the great thing here, right? You get the support and to intimidate. Again, congrats on the great new album. Are you guys going on the road? Have you been on the road? Or are you in the middle of something? Or before you let you
we
go?
Went on the road last year for a house show tour, and then we released the EP. We're going to work on writing songs here for a bit. And
yeah,
then
we have no time to write at all. So
she just got married, so...
Congrats.
Thank you.
Congrats.
He's over there.
Okay. But yeah,
yeah,
we're
do
working
more
on
stuff
that.
With the strings. They're so cool.
Oh, yeah, you guys have to play. Yeah.
Not to be...
It's so good.
Propping you guys for jobs. But yeah. It was really cool, though.
Well, thanks, guys.
Thank you. We should
thank
probably
you.
Stop. And I got to take a picture.
Yeah. Cool. Peace.
Late.
Peace. Peace out.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you. We're Rivoli, and the song is called Jolie.
It's useless just to keep it here for show. To possessions go to lay and wait. The wide-eyed man is standing up again, try on all the things they leave behind.
cast its shadow hue. Those were the days, not a contender few. I know it well, contrast its shadow hue. Sure.